Welcoming all of you to the Bhakti Sangha conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have Her Grace Jayashree Mataji. Mataji is going to enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 25th Chapter, 45th Verse. Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you so much for giving your valuable time and association to us this morning and enlightening us on this topic. Before that, I'll hand out the call to Tiffany Mataji to do introduction of Jayashree Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, dear devotees. This morning, we are very fortunate to have amongst us Her Grace Jayashree Mataji. She is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. She met His Divine Grace in 1969 in Hawaii when she was barely 20 years old. She received her second initiation from Srila Prabhupada in October of 1974. She is fondly remembered by all for being the one who stitched the saffron coat for Srila Prabhupada, which was worn lovingly by him for many years. Her Grace Jayashree Mataji later moved to New Vrindavan and served the deities there. Though she still travels to other places as part of her multiple devotional service, her main core services still rest in New Vrindavan. Vaishnava is always paradukha dukhi, thus very compassionate and kind at heart. We see that quality so prominent in Mataji. In the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, she has been painstakingly stitching masks for all age groups so that devotees can continue with uninterrupted service to Krishna. So wonderful to have you with us again, Mataji. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a big introduction for a small person like me. So I'm hoping Shamagori would read the Sanskrit for me because she's much more expert than me. So I assume I'm supposed to sing Jai Radha Madhava with my old voice.
You can sing.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Vihari Gopi Jana Balava Kivara Dari Yasoda Nandana Vrata Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kira Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Guru Deva, Jaya Guru Deva, Jaya Guru Deva, Jaya Guru Deva. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Yamuna Maya ki jai, Ganga Maya ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Srimati Tulsi Devi ki jai.
Samaveda Bhakta Vrindiki Jai, all glories to the Asamaka Bodhi, all glories to the Bodhi, all glories to the Asamaka Bodhi, all glories to Sri Vrindavananda, all glories to Sri Vrindavananda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, verse number 45.
Sapto Parita Dvara Purastasya Sudve Adha Prutagvi Shaya Gatyar Tham Tasyaya Kashchaneshvaraha.
Thank you. Sapta, seven. Upari, up. Krita, made. Dvaha, gates. Puraha, of the city. Tasya, that, two, then. Vi, two. Adha, down. Pritak, different. Visaya, two places. Gati, atam, foregoing. Tasyam, in the city. Va, one, who. Kaschana, whoever. Isvara, governor. 1 second. To close my window. Translation. Of the nine gates in the city, seven were on the surface and two were subterranean. A total of nine doors were constructed, and these led to different places. All the gates were used by the city's governor. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The seven gates of the body are situated upward, are two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, and one mouth. The two subterranean gates are the rectum and the genitals. The king, or the ruler of the body, who is the living entity, uses all of these doors to enjoy different types of material pleasures. The systems of the opening different gates to different places is still evident in old Indian cities. Formerly, a capital was surrounded by walls, and one passed through various gates to go to various cities or toward specific directions. In Old Delhi, there are still remnants of surrounding walls and various gates known as the Kashmiri Gate, the Lahore Gate, etc. Similarly, in Ahmedabad, there is the Delhi Gate. The point of this simile is that the living entity wants to enjoy different types of material opulences. And to this end, nature has given him various holes in the body and he can utilize for sense enjoyment. Om agyana timrihandasya gananjana salakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaurabhani Pacharane Nivrasaya Sastanyabhadi Ashtyacha Deshata Sri Chaitanya Manobhistyam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dharati Swapadanti Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jitapada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sacha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakani Tam Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Nuno Namostu Tapta Kancha Nagorangi Radhe Vrindavani Shri Rishabhanu Stati Devi Pranamami Hari Vansha Kalpa Tribhasha Kripa Sindhu Vaya Vachapati Tanam Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo. So this whole area of the Bhagavatam is full of similes. It's a story, and it's describing the living entity surrounded by this material body. And this particular verse is talking about the seven gates of the body, the eyes, basically the senses, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the genitals, the rectum. And there was a couple of verses that I found that were kind of elaborating on this. And this is the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 17th chapter, 29th verse. These are just pieces of the purports, basically. A devotee is not hampered by the material body, although he is situated in a physical body that runs according to so many material conditions. Just like there are five kinds of air functioning within the body and so many organs, the hands, the legs, the tongue, the genitals, rectum, etc., all working differently. The spirit soul, the living entity who is in full knowledge of his position, is always engaged in chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, and is not concerned with the bodily functions. Although the Lord is concerned with the material world, he is always situated in his spiritual energy and is always unattached to the functions of the material world. And this is verse, Canto 4, Chapter 25, verse 13. The body has been called the city of nine gates, and these nine gates include the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, one mouth, a genital, and a rectum. When the nine gates are clean and working properly, it is to be understood that the body is healthy. In India, these nine gates are kept clean by the villagers who rise early in the morning, bathe in the well or rivers, and go to the temples to attend Mangal Arati, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and take prasadam. In this way, one can advance in all facilities of human life. So the five senses, the taste, the smell, the sound, the touch, these act through the nine gates, the eyes, the ears, the mouth, the nostrils, the genitals, and the rectum. So here we are, encased in a material body and wandering in the world, identifying with the body and trying to find happiness through these gates. And we know the way the world is going on today, the poor living entities, the conditioned souls, are simply not only struggling hard with material nature, but trying to find happiness through the gates of this body. They're going hither and thither, this way and that, trying to find something to satisfy each one of these senses. And the more materialism is acquired by these living entities, we see, like in the US, there's so much facility to engage these particular senses. The eyes, there's so many things. There's so many movies and places to go to see beautiful things and travel. The living entities that have money are engaging in these sense gratifications in super ways, whereas someone who has less money, less facility, has less facility for engaging these senses. So the eyes are seeing, the ears, there's so much sound in this world, a barrage of sound. There's also the movies, the music, just unlimited types of music one can find. Of course, the natural sounds in nature, the animals, and so the living entities are running in this direction and that direction. And taste, the mouth, The tongue, that's what is it, the most difficult to control. It's rampant in this world today. The restaurants, the unfortunate limit that people will go to in this world today to satisfy the tongue. It's just bringing so much bad karma. The tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. And the kinds of atrocities that are being committed by people to be able to enjoy different tastes, very sad. So the other sense that is dragging people to hell nowadays, of course, is the genital. Not only are people trying to find legitimate activities, but the illegal and illegitimate activities people are looking for nowadays is almost unbelievable. I mean, this is where all of the, which I don't even like to think about, human trafficking. There's just so much that's happening that's way below the standard of human life or animal life even. People are just so misguided. So they're dragging the society and themselves and their families to take birth either in lower species. Of course, many of them are going to have to see hell to pay for the atrocities, for sense enjoyment that they've gotten into. It's a sad situation nowadays. I ran across a verse, Dhruva Maharaj, and it's the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, ninth chapter, text number 6. And Dhruva Maharaj is saying, "My dear Lord, you are all powerful. After entering within me, you have enlivened all of my sleeping senses. My hands, my legs, my ears, touch, sensation, life force, and especially my power of speech. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you." And Srila Prabhupada's purport. Dhruva Maharaj could understand very easily the difference between his condition before and after attaining spiritual realization. And seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, he could understand that his life force and activities had been sleeping. Unless one comes to the spiritual platforms, his bodily limbs, mind, and other facilities within the body are understood to be sleeping. Unless one is spiritually situated, all of his activities are taken as a dead man's activities or ghostly activities. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has composed a song in which he addresses himself. O living entity, get up. How long shall you sleep in the lap of Maya? Now you have the opportunity of possessing the human form. Now try to get up and realize yourself. The Vedas also declare, get up, get up. You have the opportunity, the boon of human life. Now realize yourself. Excuse me, this is the Vedic injunction. So by this particular verse, we can see that the great benediction that we have, It's amazing. We forget, or at least it's easy for me to forget where I was in my consciousness before I met Srila Prabhupada. It's like Srila Prabhupada did just that. He awakened the senses, and the Lord entered into us and enlivened our senses. We have a taste for spiritual things. Prabhupada and Krishna have kindly opened our eyes for whether we had any qualification or not. I guess only Krishna knows our past activities. But somehow or other, we've been given the opportunity to have our life Jeev Jago awakened. And now we have a taste for spiritual things. And not only that, they didn't just wake us up. They handed us a whole society of wonderful activities. Where would we be without Prabhupada and ISKCON? Where would we be? We can find faults right, left, and center with the people, with our devotees, with the organization, with management. We can find fault until the end of time. But what is the good? It's so sad, and I have to say, I have to see it myself sometimes in New Vrindavan. People find fault with the endeavors of other devotees, with the endeavors of management, not realizing that instead of enlivening and encouraging those devotees to continue on in their endeavor, they discourage them. And as a result, people become less desirous of doing the service. It's very sad, because when people become discouraged in their service, they're not enlivened, and then things get less. The strength and the enthusiasm and the ability to progress gets less. So with that enlivenment and enlightenment from within, from the Lord and Srila Prabhupada, we have this great organization to enable. It's our good fortune to be able to enthuse others in their service. The more we break up into small groups that spend time finding fault with others that are in the same basic organization of devotional service, the more we cause problems within the society. Better not to have an opinion than to have a bad opinion and to find fault with other devotees. Because if you discourage them enough, they will go away. And that does not strengthen the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Whether we agree fully or see eye to eye, I guarantee you, take any verse and you're going to get innumerable different angles of vision on that verse. You can have someone that says, Prabhupada said eat only 9 chickpeas because they read it somewhere. And then you can get someone that says, no, Prabhupada said eat as many chickpeas in this place. I heard somebody the other night make a negative comment about the, the midday meals in India. And I was thinking, how can you find fault? You can think that you've read something that make it look like that's not a great program. But basically, when it comes down to it, it's prasadam distribution. And it's going to millions of people, and it's done by people that are in the know of how to prepare food for offering and how to offer food. It's done with an attitude of devotion. So even if we feel that something should be done in a certain way or could be done better, why comment on it? Why find fault with it? It basically shoots ourselves in the foot. We're trying to grow the organization and spread Krishna consciousness. This is our opportunity. So we want to do it in such a way to enliven the world, to take up this spiritual mission. I was also listening to another group of lectures, and there was a lot of discussion about the, how can I put it, the way the ladies within ISKCON have been treated. And there were examples brought up of this and that, and this to happen to that lady, and this happened there. And I was thinking, sure, these things have happened. You know, we're not in illusion. We know that people have made mistakes in their treatment of women, children, men, karmis, animals. Well, we know these things are going on. But to make it a focal point is, in, I guess, in my opinion, just not the best way to go. Somehow or other, I guess in my experience, I mean, we have to see, I've lived within the society of ISKCON very closely, either in the temple or right next door to the temple, and always worked for the temple on some level or another for over 50 years now. So it's not that I'm not aware that things can be done, oh, maybe in a negative way towards women, but I've never seen that it's like some impediment. I've been given great opportunities. I've been the temple president, the vice president, a board member for years, management for years, head of the kitchen, head of the deity kitchen, head pujari. You know, it's like I haven't seen any impediment. So it seems to me to use our time to enliven people to the great aspects of the organization instead of the things that are mistakes. It just seems to me like a better way to go. I think Srila Prabhupada would be more pleased. He said, you'll show how you love me, how you cooperate with each other in love and trust. So what have we been given? We've been given the great society. What can we do with our time? We see pictures of deities from all over the world. My God, look at the fantastic level of devotion that has gone into all of these temples, deities, service, and the beautiful decorations, the clothes, the time to make the garlands. We have a festival for the eyes within ISKCON. We have places to travel to like no other. Look at the TOVP that's coming up. It's just a fantastic labor of love. And the music and the sound vibrations that we have for our ears, just unlimited lectures by people who are following Krishna consciousness, following the spiritual master, following the path of devotion laid down by our great teachers, our great acharyas, our great examples. And they're doing the best they can. Someone may not always agree with their angle of vision, but that's okay. They should be respected. If Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one who performs even abominable acts, if he's rightly situated, he's to be considered saintly, what to speak of someone who's just saying something different than our angle of vision of that particular devotional activity or verse? What to speak? Where are they considered? So we have the kirtans, the beautiful music. Look at all the wonderful kirtaniers we have throughout the world, male and female. At any moment in time, we can listen for hours. When we first started, we had absolutely nothing. We had no books, basically. We had the Back to Godhead magazine. We didn't have deities. We didn't have lectures and podcasts and YouTube and web. We had nothing. We had us. We had a handful of devotees in a small rented place with no money. Our prasadam wasn't like you see nowadays. You can travel to any temple and you get this elaborate array of fantastic food. We were lucky if we had anything. We'd go to the vegetable market or fruit market and beg and get old produce. And nobody knew how to cook. You know, it was amazing that we grew from such a small standard. We didn't have anything to listen to. We had our own little chanting. We didn't even have kartals and mridangas. When I was in LA a few years ago, there was an older Prabhupada disciple. And he came up to me and there was youth, our youth in the temple, and they were having their kirtan. And he came up to me and he said, "Isn't it sad, Mataji? They don't do kirtan like we did. They don't do kirtan. They should learn. They should learn how to do kirtan. You know, we spread Krishna consciousness by doing it Prabhupada's way." And I am not the person to talk to like that about the youth, because not only do I have three sons that are all kirtan singers, I also appreciate the great children that we have in our movement. And I said to him in my somewhat sarcastic tone, I said, oh, you mean the kirtans we used to have with the maracas and the jingle bells and the sticks banging together? You mean those kirtans? You mean those kirtans where we didn't know any tunes and maybe we had a few tunes of Prabhupada's and we didn't know anything about singing and we didn't know any of the prayers and everything? You mean those kirtans? I said, we had Krishna consciousness and Krishna empowered our kirtans. I said, it wasn't that we did it in a specific way and we were so instrumental in spreading Krishna consciousness. I said, Krishna empowered our kirtans and that's how we were spreading Krishna consciousness. I said, you have no business criticizing the youth. We didn't do anything any better. Anyway, so in those days, it wasn't what we had. We had Srila Prabhupada. And we had Srila Prabhupada doing just what Dhruva Maharaj was saying. Srila Prabhupada gave us the opportunity and enabled Krishna to enter us and use us as his instruments. It's not that we were so advanced. It's not that we had any great knowledge. We had nothing. But Krishna kindly used us in his service to help propagate Krishna consciousness. It's not that, it says that the Lord saves the most fallen. Lord Chaitanya saves the most fallen first. Krishna gave us an opportunity, and by some grace, we accepted it. And we're willing to do anything because we knew better than most people the opposite direction of using the senses in the sleeping condition that we were in this world today, especially in America. You can do things that you don't even believe that you did when you are under the illusion of the material energy. And when you're given an opportunity to wake up and engage in something so much higher, it's just such a such a wonderful experience. You want to go on and find more and more and more. It's the taste of devotion that impels us towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the more we go on, and the more we learn not to criticize, not to find fault, but to appreciate and honor the other devotees that are doing the same thing, the more Krishna is going to want to be with us and show himself to us and use us in his service. Who ever heard Prabhupada in a low way criticizing other devotees, living entities? Certainly he had disagreements with his god brothers. Certainly he did not appreciate some things that were done either by his own disciples or his god brothers. But there's a difference between Prabhupada's way and the way the conditioned souls that are becoming Krishna conscious do things. Prabhupada was never in a low mode of nature. Prabhupada's way of doing everything was on such a high standard. That's what we're trying to reach. Such a rare opportunity that we have. So in the Nectar of Devotion, it says, when our senses are engaged for the actual proprietor of the senses, that is called devotional service. In our conditional state, our senses are engaged in serving the bodily demands. When the same senses are engaged in executing the order of Krishna, it is called bhakti. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, bhakti or devotional service means engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Lord, the senses are purified simply by being employed in the service of the Lord. So the Nectar of Devotion is one small book. But when you open it, it's like when Mother Yasoda looked into the mouth of Krishna. She thought she was looking into the small mouth of her little child. But what did she see? She saw innumerable universes and a great expanse. And then she saw herself with Krishna. It's like when you open the Nectar of Devotion, it is not a small book. It is an amazing display and depth of pure devotion and examples and stories and different layers of bhakti that it's like Mother Yasoda looking into Krishna's mouth. Like, wait a minute, where am I? This is amazing. And it's the same way with all of Prabhupada's books. They're just books on a shelf. But are they? They are like the spiritual world. You can see why Prabhupada said they're an incarnation of the Lord. It's amazing. It's amazing that who could have done what Prabhupada did? A small, unassuming Swami with a humble demeanor and a nature of kindness and benevolence. And my God, look what he did. Look at how Krishna entered Prabhupada and engaged him in devotional service. Such a rarity. That's what Shaktivesha Avatar means. It means it's someone who the Lord has chosen to use as an instrument of very close devotional service. In our conditioned state or semi-conditioned state, we are getting glimpses and tastes of this devotion. And at any moment, we can go use our senses for mundane things, which we are inclined to do because we've been doing it for so many lifetimes. But at the same time, we can also turn at any moment and do something wonderful for Krishna according to our capability. We are not all the Radha Swamis and Bhaktacharus and Malatis and Jamunas. We're not all in deep devotion. But wherever we are, that's our opportunity. And like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, the taste can be like poison. And it's like nectar at the end. Whereas sense gratification is like nectar at the beginning and like poison at the end. It's a fact. I mean, we can see it in our own situation. But when we take to that poison tasting of devotional service, gradually, like Prabhupada gives the example of the person with jaundice. The sugar candy is very bitter. But the more the person takes the sugar candy, the sweeter it becomes. And that's a real example for a real situation. Our senses have been engaged in one way, and now they're being engaged in another. And the more we do that, that's what sadhana is for. That's what the temples are for. We get ourselves on a program like you have here, where you can get that taste and take that medicine. I think our good fortune is basically unlimited. Sure, we see people going away. And sometimes it's from their own offenses. Sometimes people detain their devotional activities because of offenses to other devotees or other living entities. I'm almost positive I told you about the letters that I read from Srila Prabhupada when I was a Brahmacharini, and he was talking about these two devotees who had left. One was the temple president and one was the head pujari. And he said they left Krishna consciousness. He said they thought they left on their own, but the fact was they left because Krishna took their taste away. Their taste was hampered. One was hampered by offenses to women, and one was hampered by offenses to the children. So no matter who we are or how big we think we are, actually, I think being a woman in Krishna consciousness in ISKCON is a great benediction. I really do. I've never thought differently. I've never thought, oh, why am I a woman? I could do this, I could do that. I don't see that at all. I see that I have the facility to, first of all, to become humble, which is a great anartha of the conditioned soul. Our lack of humility, our pride is, well, like Jesus said, having wealth, that so-called good fortune isn't an impediment. So having position and, you know, is sometimes an impediment. So I always figured that being a woman in Krishna consciousness gave you a great opportunity to develop humility and tolerance. And, just to make some progress spiritually. I think it's wonderful. And like I said before, I've never been denied any service. If you, which is an American term, if you play your cards right, you can do almost anything with this within ISKCON if it's your fate, basically. Anyway, I'm sorry, what time am I supposed to stop? I know I did this last time. Is anybody there?
Yes, Mataji, you can continue, Mataji, if you want. We are okay, Mataji.
Okay. All right, well, anyway, here we are in the body with the seven gates to deal with at this point in time. And Krishna has so kindly given us such a great opportunity to engage our senses and these gates in devotional service. I wonder what people did, how they made progress in devotional service without the opportunity that we have. I think ISKCON is such a great blessing. I just can't imagine what we would have done. And there's so many people in this world that have gotten a book. I was listening to Devamrita Swami give a talk the other day, and he was saying that when he first saw the devotees, he was in his Yale dorm room. He graduated from Yale University, and he was in his dorm room with his colleagues, and some devotees thing came on the TV, and he said they simply laughed and made fun of them. And they said, well, those people are talking about enjoyment. We could show them how to enjoy. In other words, at that time in his college, which is like so many colleges in America, it's a party scene. Sure, they're going to school, but they're doing everything else, whatever intoxication, eating whatever, sexual activities. I mean, the gates are open for that. So, and then he heard some talk and it caught his ear. And then he got a book and he was fascinated by the depth of knowledge. And then he got more books and he just read and read and read. And he was awakened that way. And then he met the devotees and, you know, moved into the ashram. People are getting a little taste of Krishna consciousness, whether it's through prasadam, whether it's through a book that they pick up or somebody says something to them. But just that little bit, it's Prabhupada said it's like an infection. Well, we've got this coronavirus. What happens if we come in contact with it? It's very possible that we will get infected and die even, or get sick. So in this case, devotional service is the Krishna corona, the Krishna virus. A little infection is going to help a living entity. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? A little advancement on this path will save one from the most dangerous type of fear, falling down into the different species of life. So we are the carrier of this Krishna infection. And somehow or other, we can find a way to utilize it, whether it's a small thing or a big thing. Some of the more advanced devotees are like the Hanumans, building bridges for Ramchandra, lifting great boulders, writing books, traveling the world, giving lectures, opening temples, making disciples. Wow, that is just incredible. But some of us are like the little spider or squirrel, depending on the story, you know, flicking our little bit of sand. Okay, here's my service. This little, I'm dressing the deities, I'm making a deity outfit, I'm giving a book to somebody. We don't know where that's going to go. We don't know how much benefit the world will know because of our little flicks of sand. We don't know how pleased the Lord will be by our little endeavors or big endeavors. But we know for sure that if we find fault with a devotee who is flicking their sand or lifting their boulders, that Krishna is not going to be pleased. Who are we? Who are we? When we get to the platform of pure devotional service, then we can help others by finding their faults or giving them criticism. But we have to be careful. Okay, so I think I'm probably finished with my flicking of sand. So if anyone has any questions, that would be nice. And if not, I don't know if this same devotee is on this call, but there was a couple of questions from last time. So please tell me how to proceed.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Dandavat Pranam. What a beautiful class. I mean, it's coming from your pure heart, and hearing from you who's filled with realizations, and you have given your life and dedication to this movement. We are very, very fortunate, and we, you know, by your blessings, we want to imbibe this positive quality of yours, that, you know, seeing everything from the vision of Srila Prabhupada, like as you say, that we are so much into fault finding, and, you know, if somebody doesn't think the way that we think, then we think that, you know, we go to any extent to do anything without thinking that that person is also a devotee. And, you know, such a wonderful class, Mataji. And I know that you had the opportunities to become Hanuman, but you still remind us a squirrel. And my question is, we want to know about that. Once when you had come to Charlotte, you shared that when you made that quote, you didn't send it directly to Srila Prabhupada, but it was Govinda Dasi Mataji who sent it to him, and Srila Prabhupada answered her, and she told the letter to you. And also you said that you had umpteen opportunities to go to India, but you always took a low profile, but with such a positive attitude and expecting nothing, you served the movement. Could you explain more the sequence of that, how it happened and how you stitched and how it reached Srila Prabhupada? And although, you know, I don't know if Srila Prabhupada knew that you did it or not. I'm not sure of that. Can you share that, Mataji?
Yeah. It's not that I'm was so humble and didn't do certain things. It's that I was, I don't want to use the word stupid, but just foolish, I guess. Krishna gives opportunities that we don't always take. One time when Prabhupada was in Hawaii, I spent the winter in Hawaii at the temple for the first time in many years. It was so wonderful. And the same Vyasa Sana is there. And I was telling the story during class one time there. Prabhupada came to Hawaii. He was sitting in the Vyasa Sana. And there's room behind the Vyasa Sana and on the side. And I just happened to be kind of to Prabhupada's right, in the back, but close. And he had a plate of cookies. And he was passing them out to everybody. And he was almost finished. And so the devotees started lining up in front of him and made a passageway for him to go out the door. And I was still on the side, in the right next to him, right next to where the cookies were. And he held up the last cookie. And he held it, and he held it, and I was right there, and I hadn't gotten a cookie yet. And I didn't just walk forward and put my hand out. I just stood there. And he took the cookie and put it on the plate, got up, and walked out. So it's not always that I did things out of humility. I didn't use my intelligence, my enthusiasm to go forward and take that cookie. So to me, some of my opportunities were missed because of my own trying to find the right word. Foolishness. I could have done different things that I didn't take the opportunity to do. So that's certain things like that have happened, and I've learned from my mistakes, right? So in the case of the coat, Govindadasi had been with Srila Prabhupada personally. Her husband was Prabhupada's servant. And so Govindadasi was also serving Prabhupada as a secretary and cooking for him and doing different things. She was the one who taught me how to cook. And she was traveling with Prabhupada, and he had the black coat. And she said, Prabhupada said he shouldn't, you know, sannyasi doesn't wear black and he doesn't wear buttons and things like that. So she asked me if I, because she knew I sewed. I was a Brahmacharini. I just moved in the temple. It was only Gorsinder Govindadasi, Balabhadra Turiyadas, and myself. We were the original Hawaii crew. And we had moved from Ka'ava, where we met, where Prabhupada came. And then we went to Sunset Beach. And then we went to town. This was all out in the country. And then we moved into town by the university on Honeywell Street. And I had my sewing machine. And she said, can you make a coat for Srila Prabhupada? I want to make him a saffron coat. So I said, sure. So she gave me a coat of Prabhupada's that he had worn in his business life. It was just a regular, like a suit coat. And that was my size pattern, you know, so I could measure that would fit him. And then I had a picture of Day's Liniment, Prabhupada's business, Day's Liniment. I had a picture of Srila Prabhupada with his mustache. And that was in my room. And then I went to the Sears store, and I somehow or other, by Krishna's grace, this is Hawaii, people don't wear wool there hardly at all. And I found some saffron wool, and I got a pattern for a sweatshirt with a hood. And from that, I manufactured a pattern for Prabhupada's coat. And then when I finished And the whole time I would try on Prabhupada's coat to measure the sleeves, and then I'd try on the coat I was making to measure the sleeves to be right. And I realized that I was the same height as Srila Prabhupada. So then I measured the length to be a proper length. And I put Velcro on it because she said a sannyasi doesn't wear buttons somehow or other, so I put Velcro on it. And then she finished it off. Well, I put them on, but the peacock feathers were her idea. So then, yes, she sent it to Srila Prabhupada. And there was also a cape that I made at the same time because she said Srila Prabhupada would sit in the morning and translate. And when it was cold, he had his wool chadar. And she said it was always falling off. He'd try and cover his head and his legs at the same time to stay warm, but then it would fall off his head or fall off his legs. So she asked to make something. I can't remember who designed it, whether it was her or me. To be like the story of Little Red Riding Hood. It's Goldilocks had a hooded cape. So she wanted a hooded cape. And I have found pictures of it. I have them somewhere, but I don't know right now. It's a cape. I used flannel, saffron flannel, double-sided. I made it double-sided. Double-sided saffron flannel. And it has a hood. And the cape is quite long, like maybe down to Prabhupada's knees when he stood up. And it had slits in the front where he could put his hands through. So basically when he sat down to translate, his head would be covered by the hood and the rest of the cape would hang over his legs. So the only thing that wasn't covered would be his face and his arms down to his wrist, I guess, forward. And so he could sit and translate and stay warm and they wouldn't fall off. So I don't know. I have seen pictures of him in the hood, but I don't know if he used it for translating, but he did use the cape some. The coat he used a lot. So she sent it to him, and it's true. I don't know if she mentioned me in the picture at all. Basically, it was from her. And so he wrote back to her, and he said something like, "My dear daughter, Govinda Dasi, thank you very much." And he said it made him feel like he was so warm. He said it made him feel like he was on the lap of his mother. So she did read me the letter and it was wonderful. It made me feel very good.
Wow, Mataji, thank you so much. And sorry, I would be, I know I'd be real cruel hearted to, you know, just keep quiet listening to you tell that you're foolish, because coming to Krishna consciousness is such an intelligent thing, and that too, you're from a very affluent background. My second question is about that. I heard you say that your dad could afford a sports car every year, and not only that, coming to Krishna consciousness is the most intelligent thing, and also to stay in Krishna consciousness, really being humble and tolerant and having a positive attitude for so many years is absolutely you know, amazing, and only the most intelligent could do that. So really want to pay our humble obeisances to you for setting such a wonderful example. Like to tell about your background, your family, and how you came to Krishna consciousness. I know you mentioned that Srila Prabhupada was your first person who invited you, and then he was talking to you, and I remember you said that he gave you the book and also asked the money for it.
Right.
So if you could tell something about your family background. Thank you, Mataji.
Okay, I was just looking at my letters from Srila Prabhupada. I have a few of them. Some of them were stolen, but some of them I have. And I know, I can't find it immediately, but it's true. He did say, he said that I was very intelligent. Prabhupada said that I was very nice. There's a couple of places he said that. And he also said I was very intelligent. So it's not that I am, you're right, I'm not like a, my intelligence was knowing that I had found Krishna consciousness and a spiritual path and staying with it. Yes, you're right. That is a type of intelligence. It's not necessarily that I am super educated. I started college and then I started on a spiritual path. And then when I met Prabhupada, there was no question of going back to school and pursuing a career. I had found what my mission in life was. I had found what I was looking for. Without a mission in life, what is the use of it? I mean, my family, my father was a manager of Dun & Bradstreet in Hawaii. He started the office there. I moved to Hawaii when I was about 12. You know, I definitely didn't want for anything. I loved my father very much. My mother was very sick, and then she was in a hospital, and I never knew her the rest of my life. And my father remarried. Actually, I was 10 when I went to Hawaii, and my father remarried when I was 12. And that mother, stepmother, has been my mother throughout my life. But I had, Krishna put me in a good place. He put me in a good place. My parents were good people, responsible people. We had a certain amount of wealth, definitely not elaborate wealth, but, you know, good enough to own a house overlooking the ocean in Hawaii. But then at a certain point, I just developed a very strong urge for God. And I left all that I had known and went traveling looking for answers, basically. And I also entered into the hippie movement, like so many other God brothers and God sisters, because there was some knowledge there, some camaraderie that a 9-to-5 job to make money just to be able to sit and watch a football game on Sunday and drink martinis and beers and eat hamburgers, and it was not the goal of life. You know, that's, we went looking for something higher. And you'll see in most cases, I would say most of us were attracted by things from India. You know, it was like, wow, India Imports was the store and everyone was into it. Incense and tapestries and so many things. And so when I met Srila Prabhupada, it was like, yes, this is what I'm looking for. A reason for the whole picture. And then once you meet somebody like Srila Prabhupada in that situation, I certainly wasn't about to go back and, you know, start over again and try and make money so I could buy that house and buy that car. And it's like, but then as things grew and ISKCON flourished, you know, many of us started having families. And then the temples, as we know in America, started to deplete. the history. Everyone lived in the temple. Everyone survived off the temple money. We all made money for the temple. You know, everything we did was around the temple. And then years later, it wasn't like that anymore. Like New Vrindavan itself went from 800 people down to about 50. You know, everyone went on their way due to many things. Different places, New Vrindavan had its own issues. But then also, on the other hand, people started getting families, and what do you do? What do you do when there's no money, when you have no money? So many people started either getting back into professions or finding businesses where they could do both, raise a family and be part of Krishna consciousness. So things developed in that way. So fortunately, I had the intelligence to stay very closely knit in my spiritual activities. And at the same time, I would do things. I would work in the mall. I would have my own businesses in the mall that were temporary, like 2 month stints. And I would make just enough money to live the rest of the year and do service at the temple. But I don't think there's certainly nothing wrong with people making money, raising a family, owning a house. It's just things were different. We came in a certain way at a certain time, I feel, to help Prabhupada in his service. And those of us that have chosen to still live very simply are doing that, and those that have chosen to, you know, go on with a career or a profession and get more materially involved, that's fine. And many of those people have used their money and their time for Krishna service. You know, like some of the devotees that were lawyers. Tulsi Das, who owns the Primal Strips, the vegan jerky Primal Strips, he started off as like a temple president. He's the one, he and somebody else, they built the Durban Temple. You know, these are, and Prabhupada sent him to, I believe it was LA. He was one of the original temple presidents. He was in Bombay. And then he started business. And now he's a millionaire. But what does he do with his money? He gives it to the TOVP. He gives it to the Sandipani Muni School. He put hundreds and thousands of dollars. Oh, someone's not muted. Anyway, he's given hundreds and thousands of dollars into this Bhaktivedanta Vedic Library that he has produced, which is a website that's free, that anyone can go to, that has all of Prabhupada's books with purports read, their audio books, and he's got cooking demos and little videos, very professionally done, and he's put hundreds and thousands of dollars into producing those and paying devotees to do that. You know, here's someone who's done a lot of great things. And he lives very simply. He has a big house right on the ridge here in New Vrindavan. And he employs a lot of devotees and he gives a lot of money away to certain things like TOVP. So it depends on the person and how circumstances come their way. But there's a lot to be done and a lot of different ways to go about it. And if you haven't gone to the Bhaktivedanta Vedic Library, please do. It's something that you can stream from your phone into your car. on your iPad, on your computer, and you can listen to Prabhupada's books, and it's free. He doesn't even ask for donations. He doesn't want donations. Anyway. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so very much for the wonderful class. And I, for one, am very grateful to you and all of Srila Prabhupada's disciples for being instruments and having the intelligence to stay with Srila Prabhupada and take this, grow his movement, because without you, we wouldn't be here ourselves. The movement wouldn't be where it is, I would never have gotten the opportunity to learn about Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So I'm so very grateful. And I'm also very inspired by this class as well as the class you gave last time. Because everything you've said is about living a simple life. And that's really, to me, that's the essence of it. Because, as Srila Prabhupada said, simple living, high thinking. And if we're so busy complicating our lives, then we can't focus on the high thinking. So thank you very much. I'm very grateful to you. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Can I answer the question of this from the last class? Is that okay? I don't know if the devotee is on. Shamagori, is the person on that asked this question last time? Shamagori, are you there?
Yeah. I don't know who asked. Maybe the question was from the Facebook, I think.
Oh, yes, it was from Facebook. Okay, well, if you don't mind, can I just go ahead and answer it?
Yeah, you can answer, because a lot of people, they hear the recording, so they might get their answer.
Okay, well, the question that was asked is, I'm thinking, how did you decide at such an early age to become a disciple? Like nowadays, it's so difficult to make teenagers understand that we should chant and do some service for Krishna. So can you give some guidance for that? And I just want to say that you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. That's the old American saying. So in my case, I was looking for something spiritual. And when I met Prabhupada, it was obvious to me that he was the person, and this knowledge was, this is what I was looking for. But when it comes to the children that come into our movement through taking birth here, we have to realize that they are also individuals that have just come our way in the temporary span of life. They are not ours. We cannot dictate what they should feel and what they should do. We give them an opportunity. I have three sons and I had a daughter. My sons have all been given an opportunity to be around Krishna consciousness. And I have never, fortunately, forced Krishna consciousness on my children. Well, they did. My older kids went to the Gurukula, which for me is one of those things that gives me great happiness and great distress because of the abuse that was in our schools at the time. So my children were exposed to things that I didn't know until later. So that's something else. But at the same time, I've never tried to push my kids into Krishna consciousness on my own. I never say to them, are you chanting? Well, why aren't you chanting? You should chant. Or what are you watching that for? That's just nonsense. You should be watching this. Or, you know, we have to be extremely careful. We know by reading the history of some of the great devotees from Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, especially that not all of their children were devotees. They didn't take up Krishna consciousness. So we have to expect that some of the persons that are coming our way are not necessarily going to take up Krishna consciousness. And we have to be careful not to shame them into trying to do so. And I'm going to have to tell you a story. And there was a family that used to come to New Vrindavan all the time. And they had a son. And the son was always, when he was younger, always helping and part of the kirtan and helping serve the prasadam. And, you know, but as he got older and started going to high school, university, he wasn't so interested in Krishna consciousness. And I don't at all say that this is the fault of his parents, because they were wonderful people. But due to some pressures, the boy became so frustrated that he killed himself. And he was like his first year of college. And the parents, especially the mother, totally blamed herself. Now, I don't know, as I say, I don't know the circumstances, but I'm saying that these other persons have a right to live however they want to live. If we give them Krishna consciousness and they don't take it up, then that's basically their choice and their path. And we've seen in so many of our older kids that were born into the movement many years ago. Some of them go their own direction and get into all kinds of things. Intoxication, some even meat eating. They get into whatever. We were reading in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam when I was in Hawaii how the youth of this age is victimized by the age and all of the things and allurements. But at the same time, if we give them Krishna consciousness when they're young, and if we ourselves, and this is just my own experience, if we ourselves have a very loving and unjudging temperament with our children, they can more easily appreciate Krishna consciousness, and they are more likely, it seems to me, able to take shelter of Krishna consciousness, Krishna, Prabhupada, when they get into difficulties and reverses in their life. And I have personally seen that with my own children. So personally, I think it's a better approach to leave the door open and to not shame or judge our children, but to appreciate them for who they are and what they're doing. You know, even if it's not to our taste or our desire, if the door is open, you'll see most likely. I mean, Prabhupada even said that. He said that the children will come back. Even the Amish people, they, at a certain point in the children's life, from what I know, let them do go anywhere, do anything, and at a certain point, they have to decide if they're going to be part of the group or not. And our society is not so much like that, but at the same time, why not leave the door open? You know, when my children's age group and a little bit older, they had been through a lot. The immaturity of ISKCON, the immaturity of leaders within ISKCON back in the day when they were growing up. Malati and I just had a discussion yesterday, actually, about certain things. And she was saying in some of the purports, Prabhupada talks about getting girls married at puberty at 12 or 11. And so back in the day, some of the leaders decided, well, Prabhupada said it, so that must be what we should do. And they took American youth and tried to fit them into that paradigm. And it was disastrous. It left a great scar on some of these young people. You know, it's like Prabhupada was giving a vision of the ideal Vedic lifestyle that he saw basically also in his youth with his mother. His mother, he said, was so chaste that she wouldn't even go to the neighbor's house without going in a palanquin. I mean, are we going to try and fit that into our everyday life? I don't think so. So we have to use our intelligence. But when our kids were growing up, that mature intelligence was not around. So a lot of our youth, when they got older, especially if they had had any abusive situations, say in the ashram, they rebelled. I mean, a lot, you know. But you'll see with a tender, loving care and with ISKCON maturing and the older devotees maturing, that it's settled at a better point. It came back around at a better point. And many of those youth are now doing things for our movement and should be honored in, you know, as much as they wanted to take up Krishna consciousness. So anyway, I hope that answered that question. And there was another question that I can, if you don't mind. The second question is, how did you feel when you first met Srila Prabhupada? Did you feel like some bells and ringing in your head or like sparkling bright light, or how it's described in the scriptures when God comes for devotees? Well, I mean, I didn't have any bright lights or anything, but at the same time, it was a glorious encounter. Prabhupada himself was effulgent. There's no doubt about that. And his energy and his person, the atmosphere around Srila Prabhupada was just perfect. It was peaceful and beautiful, serene, and Prabhupada's knowledge was captivating. It answered all of my questions within just a few minutes. He answered so many questions that I had about spiritual life that, you know, would have been impossible for me to get anywhere else. So it was a great experience, just a beautiful, great experience. But no, there were no whistles and bells. He fulfilled what I was looking for. Okay. So if anyone else has any questions or any additions, please.
Thank you, Mataji, for beautiful, beautiful class, beautiful realizations, Mataji. Thank you so much for sharing. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much. It was very, very nice. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much for your beautiful words, Mataji. Your answers really help us in raising our kids. Thank you. A wonderful task, Mataji.
Oh, you are very, very welcome.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Koti koti dhanyavad pranam. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Gurudev ki ji.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji.
You are very welcome.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you very much for the enlightening. Especially about the question for teenagers and children, which you have told.
And you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We will end here. Vardhana Mataji.
Yes, sure, Mataji. If nobody have any question, can we end the call here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mataji, for your enlightening class.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you.